This is GamesAtWork.biz with your hosts, Faber Boyd-Adaris, Michael Martin, and Michael Rowe. This is your weekly podcast about gamification, gaming technology, and play. The thoughts and opinions expressed on this podcast are those of the hosts and guests alone, not of any organization which we have been, are, or will be affiliated. This is episode 137, Augmented Reality in the Boardroom and Beyond, and was recorded on Friday, the 20th of May, 2016. Hello, this is Michael Martin coming to you live for yet another edition of GamesAtWork.biz, and I'm really happy to be back in North Carolina after a trip to Orlando, Florida this week, and to be joined by my great friend and co-host, Phaedra Boyd-Adaris. Hey, Phaedra.
Hey, Michael. Glad you're back on the show. Welcome home.
Yes, I was missing it big time. So we have a chance to do kind of a quick hitter on a few different topics, and you've been heads down in some of the medical new latest and greatest stuff. So why don't we just jump right in with what you've been seeing? I'm curious to know.
Well, the discussions that I've been in have mainly been around mental wellness applications and how that whole space is evolving. So I just wanted to talk to you about it because I'm curious about what your thoughts are. So right now, the way that health practitioners are utilizing applications to glean information from patients about their mental wellness is via something called e-diaries. And basically, this is a survey application which says, so, you know, tell us what your mood is from scale from 1 to 10 and, you know, what's your weight today and let me check to make sure you're eating and those kinds of things, right? The big problem with these e-diaries is they're boring as hell. And also, there's a level of bias that could be incorporated over time. So, for example, the patient might say, oh, my God, I just don't want to deal with this right now. So I'm going to say 10 on everything. You know what I mean? Or or they might be in denial and they might say, I'm perfectly fine. I'm perfectly fine. And actually, they're not perfectly fine. So practitioners are looking at more and more innovative ways of being able to extract information from people that's viable. And so there's a couple of different ideas that I wanted to talk about on the show. One was mining structured and unstructured data passively. Imagine that you're a prolific Facebook and Twitter user, but for the last 10 days, you've really fallen off the face of the planet. You're not as social as you were.
Right.
And by the way, maybe your driving behavior is totally erratic over these 10 days. And now something prompts you that says, hey, I've noticed the change in pattern. Is everything okay? And in this way, it's pattern-induced patient engagement. The challenge with this is, of course, that some people are saying this is far too invasive for patients. Which is kind of interesting considering how much data is already being mined about people online, right? Including Google and, hey, we noticed you like these shoes. You might want to buy these, right? But so I was curious what your thoughts were. And also I wanted you to know that a follow-up idea, if something like this is too invasive, would be that there's been some interesting research done, especially around depression patterns and how people who are depressed versus people who are not depressed approach video games. Mm-hmm. And if there's a way of just using a game as a gauge to be able to gauge how depressed someone actually is. So what are your thoughts on this?
Gosh, well, lots. I mean, I was going right where you were that said, hey, let's be pattern seeking. Let's look at the content of the Facebook posts. Let's evaluate the language for happiness, satisfaction, lack thereof, right? Frequency certainly goes into the mix. And you could probably do some additional things around accelerometer for determining whether the person's moving around or if they are moving with their phone or with their Fitbit or whatever, at what point in day or night. Are they restless in the evening or are they getting some exercise perhaps during the day? So lots of insight could come from that sort of thing. On the invasiveness of the data, I guess the thing here is that you're looking at the data about yourself. So if there could be a way of keeping the data in a locker or in some controlled environment that's only good for yourself, that might get around that sort of problem. But flip side to this, there's so much data, like you said, being collected in so many places. Yeah. I'm thinking of the Under Armour recent example of people who are submitting tons of physical data to Under Armour with the concept of having the benefit of finding people that are like you, body mass, height, weight, level of activity, etc., and learning what is working for people like you. It's anonymized, but it might be something people are willing to do. Apparently a lot are.
Exactly my point. But like I said, some are pushing back saying, no. The thing is about the locker, the point of this would be you not only gather data about a patient for a patient's use, but you're also saying, you know what, I sense you're in crisis. You know, let me recommend, ways in which you might be able to get some help, or let me alert your practitioner, right? So that's the part where it's going to be interesting to see. I mean, we have HIPAA compliance in order to be able to protect our data. But it'll be interesting to see what the dialogue is in this regard, with regards to mental wellness of someone.
Right. And I think that it can be structured in a way that says the data is being used for you, right? It could be set that nothing goes to your therapist or your doctor or whatever unless you allow it. And you might have those choices to say, trust no one but me, or let the data be shared with the doctor or with researchers or more, and kind of in a graduated way of saying who can see what. And that gives the individual some control because, boy, you know, you could just see the litigious side of all this go the wrong way if the data were there, if everyone saw the signs and no one acted on it, you know?
Right. It'll be interesting. And I've also, as I mentioned, the research about how people who are depressed approach video games. The research was around how they approach decision making, and you can sort of extrapolate how you might be able to see how they might approach decision making within games. But in essence, within this report, what they do is they're much more risk averse.
Right.
So they will, they may have lower energy, but strategically they make better decisions if they've got more time because they're more risk averse. Whereas people who aren't depressed have a lot of energy, but they may make more rash decisions.
Yeah, so they just want to see what happens.
Yeah.
So here's a thought. Could there be a monitor on top of the video game? So it isn't like I've designed a specific game that is boring as all get out that I need to play as part of my treatment regime, but instead there's a module that can sit on top of the Xbox platform or on top of iOS or whatever and do that level of monitoring. So if I'm loving Angry Birds or I'm loving, you know, Call of Duty or whatever, it can sit on top of it. And it's not just a game that is written specifically for mental health pattern decision making.
Right, exactly. Yeah, and imagine if you could incorporate some kind of an algorithm that people can embed across video games in order to gauge depression. It could be interesting to see. You know, now you've got all these games cranking out more interesting data analytics about players than one might imagine. Speaking of depression and games,
yes.
I know this is such a happy topic.
Happy.
So there's an interesting game that won the 2015 South by Southwest Gaming Award. They were a gaming award winner, so they won the gaming award. They were also audience award winner for the Independent Games Festival, and Time Magazine listed it as one of the best games of 2014. This is an interesting game called The War of Mine. And this game is by 11-Bit Studios. And it's up on Steam, so you're welcome to go in and try it out. But in essence, this is unlike other war games which you might have played. With this one, you are not playing a soldier, you're actually playing a civilian, and you're trying to survive in this besieged city. So you've got to figure out what kind of decisions you're going to make in order to stay alive, but also hopefully try to keep your humanity. So it's just a fascinating game. And the comments on the boards from the community has really been quite striking. So I do recommend, if you're curious at all about games that might influence behavior, or at least thinking, please do take a look at The War of Mine.
So what are people saying on the comment board for the...
Oh, my goodness. It's been overwhelmingly positive. Overwhelmingly positive. The kinds of comments that there are on there, and people saying or lamenting, saying, how am I going to get my teenage son to play this? But they're really saying it's very touching, a touching reflection on the suffering caused by war. And they're talking, there have been some very interesting stories that have been embedded into the game. So it's just interesting to see just the kinds of conversations.
Is it any particular place or space? I mean, is it like your scenario around Syria or around, I don't know, I mean, pick your favorite war-torn region. Is there a particular place in the world it's focused on?
Not that I can tell. Mm-hmm. It seems fairly
generic.
Yeah.
That sounds fascinating. And the idea of involving yourself in a war game, not as a protagonist in the war against aliens or others or whatever. Boy, how interesting, huh?
Yeah.
So we'll have to look at that. So I had a couple of things I wanted to bring to the table, so to speak, today from my time in Orlando this week. I was lucky enough to have the opportunity to attend the SAP annual conference called Sapphire Now. And there were a number of things that were going on there that really clicked into stories and ways that we've been talking about how people and companies can make use of information and be smarter about it. So the two, three things that I wanted to bring in were, first, the concept of a digital boardroom. So the way this was visualize and you could experience it yourself at the conference was, imagine three really big TVs that are on a wall big enough that you can touch any part of that TV from the top to the bottom of it. And it's a natural height for people of average height being able to touch whatever they want. And the board was broken up into a series of widgets, some of which would be Reuters news feeds, some of which would be some weather or stock data, comparisons against competitors, hotspot opportunities for your sales team, information about your human resources, number of new hires, current employees, average ages and salaries, and so on, that it was, you're able to viscerally interact with the data by touching it and by manipulating it directly on those screens.
Really cool. What a nice interactive experience. I'm sure it was very engaging.
Yeah, absolutely. And you're able to see how the business is running essentially in real time, right? So if your manufacturing is experiencing a problem, you can see some alerts, you can drill down, it can show you the geographic region where those factories are. The news feed would be able to change to information that's relevant about what's going on in that region of the world. Lots of nice stuff about this, with the intent that this allows for a boardroom conversation with your board of trustees and explain how your business is running and where it goes and what's going on with it. So very, very, very cool. And it's not intended to be only for a boardroom. It's intended to be able to be used at all levels, really, of an organization. Like your marketing department might have a different set of insights that they're looking at in terms of their sales campaigns and their advertising penetration and whatnot. But all the data would roll up essentially to the top levels, and you can configure it how you like. So I tweeted about this. There's a few pictures out on Twitter. I'll put a couple into the show notes so that you can get a sense of what this looked like.
Awesome. Really cool.
So the next one that was shown by SAP was something called a Knowledge Workspace, I think is, was the name of it. And what they did there is they used a Microsoft Surface. So you remember where that first showed up as like a table, right? And you would interact data on the table. You'd group your photos together. You'd spread them out and stuff like that. The demo that was done with this Knowledge Workspace was looking at, hey, we've got a business problem going on right now. We're an automotive company. We're having problems with alternators in our cars. We're trying to sort out what's going on. And to the left and to the right of the screen, there are assets at your disposal. There are things like people. There's data about how your company is running, the way things are working. And the way they did this was they dragged over the alternators, and then they dragged over what was going on in the weather, and then they dragged the alternators onto the weather and the alternators onto a map. And so it showed you that, hey, this problem is localized to Spain. The problem is correlated heavily with the temperature increases. So the result was, hey, maybe the temperature increases in Spain is causing the localized failure of these alternators in your cars. So what are we going to do about it? Let's drag over the supplier of these things. Let's do a voting session on whether we want to contact the owners of those cars to have them bring it in. You can see where this is going, right?
Yeah. The collaboration tools, too. Like, here's these insights. Now what are we going to do? And let's figure out how to collaborate and play through different what-if scenarios.
Exactly. And I had a moment or three to spend with the team that did the demo later on in the show, where what I suggested there was, and they're already thinking this way, actually, so not surprising, is that the people there knew who to go to. They knew the supplier and the person at the supplier company that was going to be responsive. They knew the right engineers to drag into the mix. They knew to drag the weather and the map data together with the failures to kind of sort that out. And the point that I raised, and they said, yeah, we're thinking about this already, is that every time you solve a problem like what they showed, that is now a corpus of knowledge that can be used by the system to do machine learning and test out possible solutions. So when a future problem happens, you're not relying on the people to kind of drag things around and see what pops out. The system, the underlying cognitive system, could do that for you, and then again begin to show you stuff that maybe has now a threshold of causality that humans need to look at and do something with and dispense with things that don't make as much sense. You know what I'm saying?
I do. Really cool.
Yeah. So the last thing that kind of clicks in with some of my experiences at the SwitchPoint conference in Saxapahaw just a couple of weeks ago. and what I've just described is, where do you go next with this, right?
Yeah.
And virtual reality had a significant presence. The leadership of SAP did talk about it during their keynotes, and they had some booths that were from partner vendor companies showing what they're doing with virtual reality too, on the factory floor and training and education wise. But where I think this can go next is in the augmented reality space, especially in the HoloLens kind of structure, because Microsoft has the chance to connect some of these dots here together with the business data, and you're able to visualize it, interact with the hologram of the people from your supplier who are beaming into your meeting room, interacting with their Microsoft Surface, which is connected to yours, and you're seeing everything, the people, the products that are problematic, spin them around in real time. It's all there.
It makes a lot of sense. And that sounds like a very viable content, very viable content for augmented reality versus virtual reality per se.
Right, right.
But you can definitely see, I mean, the layers of different kinds of data, right? And being able to really manipulate it in a way that's very interesting and immersive and more humanistic even. That's very cool. How interesting.
I these pieces of the puzzle kind of came together for me. There was a Washington Post article that was saying, hey, people who watch sports are not going to go for augmented reality. And they had a minute and a half video from Microsoft about these people sitting down watching a football game. And then on the coffee table in front of them, they kind of make a couple gestures that create a stadium on your coffee table. And then you can spin things around on the table and you can see how the players are moving and how someone caught the ball and were they inbounds, out of bounds. And then that it was kind of funny, a player busting through the wall and there's stats being around them. So you could see that while the game's going on. Mm. That article was saying, hey, people are not going to go for that. I don't know. I think they will. And people who really love sports and love statistics and love to bring everything together, that example with the digital boardroom example, with what we saw in Switchpoint, to me says we're closer to all this stuff than
I would
think
agree.
We might be.
And I also think there's an opportunity for spectators too with this. Mm-hmm. So especially you mentioned esports. So not only being a player within esports, but a spectator so that you can view the different layers of data and then actually start contributing to the environment. So if you want to gift things to different players
right.
or heckle players in game, and so I think there's certainly an opportunity to start to merge all these different worlds.
Well, and we draw the circle right back to where you started today in the medical field, right? If there's a problem, you know, we're going through a routine surgery, there's an issue, you can bring in someone who can consult and actually be there without being there. Look at what's happening, see a virtual representation of the patient, point out things that will then glow for the doctor in the room and potentially make it an enormous difference.
Yeah,
that level of telepresence or being on the factory floor and understanding why a machine is broken or a process flow is not working. Ah, crazy interesting stuff can happen here.
It's a brave new world.
Yeah.
Cool.
All right. Well, I know it was going to be a short one today, but a couple of very intriguing ideas from both of us. And I will be checking out this more of mine for sure, because that just seems a very interesting take on the toll war takes on people, on civilians. And that's well worth understanding.
Yeah, I think so. I think so. But again, it goes back to, all right, so who do we get to change their minds?
Yeah.
You know, is it the people who already, you know, feel disgusted by war and the effects of war? Or I don't know. It'll be interesting to see. Certainly interesting to play.
Yeah, absolutely. So we'll have links to that also in the show notes. And we're looking forward to hearing your thoughts and your ideas and other places where you think these concepts might apply, and we'll be happy to talk about them on our next gamesatwork.biz recording.
Great talking to you. Thank you.
Thanks, everyone.
See you next show.
Bye. Talk to y'all. Bye.
You've been listening to gamesatwork.biz, the podcast about gaming technology and play. We are part of the Blueberry Podcasting Network, and we'd like to thank the band Random Encounters for their song, Big Blue. You can follow us on Twitter at gamesatwork_biz or at our website at gamesatwork.biz.